anybody can go to a library and read, and they have everything there. And if you want to enrich your life and you want to think differently or you want to know more, you can. There's a place that you can go that is free, and you can do that.
Today I want to talk really briefly about the idea of sacred places. It's easy to find quote-unquote sacred places. I've been to the Western Wall in Jerusalem, I've been to fog-shrouded Taoist mountains in southern China, I've been to Joshua Tree when the sun sets and the stars come out in that perfect twilight. Those are all places that smack you in the face with the immensity of their existence. They point to a deep history, a deep feeling, something more ourselves than checking Instagram for a like or checking whether or not at least there's this got another review on iTunes. Please do that if you guys have time today. It only takes a second. It means a lot to me. Simply existing in those places refreshes you. It changes your thinking for a long time. It's, to use a word that's in vogue, self-care. What's harder to see, but no less rewarding, is those sacred places in mundanity. Can you find the Western Wall on a street corner, a Taoist monastery in a neighborhood park, Joshua Tree on a highway overpass? There are beautiful and important places all around us, and it's worth looking for them. Now, this episode is about a lot of things. It's about public utility, it's about learning new things in the face of adversity. But I think among those things, and something I took away from it, is this idea of finding important and meaningful places in our day-to-day world. I hope you guys enjoy it. As always, please find me on social media at least pod for all three of the big ones, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Like, review, and if you happen to like an episode, share it with somebody close to you. Thanks, guys. Have a safe drive on the 405, or if you're trying to go across town, the 101, or any of your regional flyover highways if you're not in Los Angeles. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to At Least There's This, a show that tries to give you some modicum of silver lining in the dust bowl of our souls that we've all entered. If you're hearing some loud music in the background, that's because we do record in an active improv theater that, for some reason, I don't know, is doing opera? There's nothing funny about opera, having dated an opera singer before. It's usually just filled with people who like to talk about their vocal cords way too much. But that's about me, and we don't need to talk about me right now. What we need to talk about is the state of the world. So I'm recording this in mid to late February. The Mueller investigation is just, this is like a never-ending TV show where every time you think, like, okay, cool, Goku killed Frieza, we're done with that, that's when the Cell saga starts. And it's like, Jesus, another bad guy? How are there this many powerful bad guys who can go that high in Super Saiyan? But in a world where you got to take the good with the bad, at least there's
the public library.
Guys, I'm going to gush for a second. I'm with the wonderful, the amazing Katie Willer. You might know her from After Hours or from the Cracked Podcast. If you guys listen to some of their great live episodes, you also might know her because she's an amazing stand-up. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Katie Willer, and I act and write and produce. Yay!
Okay, and that's the podcast, and I'll talk to you guys later. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm having a good Sunday. Am I allowed to say what day it is?
Yeah,
I don't know when you
it's
do.
Fine.
I don't when these when you put these up. Yeah, no, it's a good day.
It's always Sunday somewhere, right?
I don't think that's how the dateline works, but okay.
No. All right.
It doesn't work like it's always 5 o'clock somewhere.
You have your reality and I have mine.
That's true. We all only have our own realities.
That's all we can do in this flat earth we live in.
Yep.
Katie, are you an optimist or a pessimist?
Optimist.
Do you want to tell me why?
It just is my nature. Okay. I have a faith that people are inherently good, but people are full of fear, and people have had shitty things happen to them, and that affects how they behave. And so I always believe that there's change. Not like this whole administration has been easy for me. I've been incredibly depressed, and it's been very hard to keep the optimism that I have. But, like, spiritually, holistically, I'm an optimist.
I was actually talking to engineer Veronica outside before we came in about just the climate of fear we're living in. Mm-hmm. And that's such a trite thing to say. Oh, climate of fear. Like, everybody says that all the time.
No, everybody's afraid all the time, and people lash out when they're afraid.
Yeah.
And people do terrible, awful things when they're afraid. And they think that that's the only solution instead of facing fear.
Right. Of, like, not have your shoulders hunched anymore. It feels you have two options, and it's either, like, relax and meet up with people, or, you know, keep your shoulders up and start throwing elbows.
Right.
So when you see people throwing bows, it doesn't knock you off of your optimism?
No, and I'm talking about fear for the oppressed. Fear as a basis of people oppressing others. I think that so many beautiful things are happening because people are pushing through their fear. People are being uncomfortable getting out there, reaching out to others, doing the work, like moving through the fear. I'm talking about like people in positions of power, like old white dudes are afraid. They're so afraid, and they're doing everything because they're friggin' afraid. I mean, there are people who legitimately are fearing for their safety right now, and that's not what I'm talking about. Like, they shouldn't have to be afraid for their safety.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about maintaining this. The fear of losing the status quo is what is, I think, driving a lot of people to be atrocious and terrible to others. And there's no excuse for that. Real heavy.
Yeah, getting real. Oof, real heavy. Does that optimism drive you in your comedy? Because I have a lot of comedians on the podcast.
Right.
And most of them turn out to be optimists. And that strikes me as a little weird.
I think you have to be an optimist if you're going into a career in comedy, right? If you thought there was no point, why would you do it? I don't know. I'm silly. I'm goofy. I'm a weirdo. I'm not political. Topical humor is not really my thing. For me, comedy is my escape. Just do something weird and silly to make someone forget about what's going on for a hot second. I like to spread joy. And I know not everybody's going to, like, want it, you know?
Right.
And I think I'm pretty good about respecting people's boundaries in terms of, like, I'm here and I'm open and I'm here for people who want me to be there for them. And sometimes people need space or they don't want to interact in that way. And that's fine. And I give people their space.
Right.
Like, I think that's an important thing to understand, too, because everyone's going through things in their own way. And not to, like, push yourself on a person in terms of, like, trying to make them feel better. I think just offering that you're there.
Yeah.
Asking them what you can do to help. And if they say nothing, to not get your feelings hurt, and just be like, cool. Well,
fuck
like,
off.
I'm here if you need it, and I'm going to go over there, but I wish you well.
I wish you well.
Well, it's hard. It is hard because I think, at least for me, I have like an inherent people-pleasing like part of me, and I've done a lot of work over the years to just like know that other people's reactions to me, as long as what I'm doing doesn't have ulterior motives and is kind and loving, if it's not received by other people, it's not my fault. Do you know? And that, like, to not keep pushing to try and make it happen. I think I did that a lot. Like, but no, if you just listen to me, you'd, you know, like me, or you'd think this is funny. And
I think the first time I ever went to, like, a big party and didn't feel awful, I had this thought of, like, oh, everyone's just on a different drug than me. You know? Or, like, even if people aren't high, like, oh, we're always just on different drugs.
Yeah, and different wavelengths, different moods. And I think also the other thing is just understanding that other people are going through so much shit that you don't know, that you have no idea what happened in the past, what happened a year ago, what happened yesterday to a person that might just generally affect their mood or how they want to interact with people, right? Or if they're just totally in their head and not aware of, like, kind of what their interactions are, like, that's a big thing for me is just I never know. I never, ever know what a person's going through, because I know that when I'm feeling really gnarly. Like, I might not be the warmest, most friendly person, you know?
Right.
And I would hope that others would respect my boundaries.
When you feel like shit, do you want people around?
Oh, I isolate.
Me too.
I'm really bad about that. I isolate. I don't put things away. I don't throw out my trash. I watch the same episodes of television over and over again. I just don't take very good care of myself. And then I move through it. I have like really gnarly PMDD, which is premenstrual dysphoric disorder. It's like a more intense version of PMS. Whereas PMS, you have like mood swings and you feel like shitty and you have, you know, pain or whatever. PMDD is like severe hormonal shifts in your emotion as well as like crippling pain or whatever. And I don't have the pain so much, but I have like cyclical depression, like suicidal ideation type.
On the monthly?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I think I isolate during that time specifically because I'm like, if I just stay alone, I won't like hurt. And it, you know, like I'll just like sit it out.
Yeah.
Like a storm, like a ship in the harbor.
Nail boards on your windows.
And just like do things that I'm comfortable with and go out when I need to go out. And then move through it and like being kind to myself when I do feel that way instead of trying, because I'm like very like, pull, you know, you got to pull yourself up by your bootstraps and like just like push through it and you'll be fine. And sometimes that doesn't do you a service emotionally, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like at this point now, I'm almost 30. I know before it would take me by surprise every time I get to that place.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think it's like when I feel like such garbage, when I feel like hopeless and like maybe the world would be better without me or whatever.
Right.
A little light goes off now and I'm just like, okay, this is not, you're feeling this way, but what your perception of your reality currently is not, is very skewed. And you need to just, it's okay to have those, it's like fine to have thoughts. Right, but like in terms of letting them get any farther than that, just like trying to stay.
Yeah.
Just address the thoughts and go like, okay, well, let's go to bed. Let's drink some water. Let's reach out to somebody.
Don't let them drive the ship.
Right. I'm very lucky in that I do not have chronic depression. I think that that is such a difficult thing to maneuver through, and I can't imagine. I have a lot of empathy for people who have to. Who deal with it constantly and need to find medication and need to like figure out the balance that works for them. Luckily that's not something that I have had to deal with.
Why did you want to talk about the library today?
Because I've been in LA for 8 years, almost 9.
You're 28 or 29?
I'm 29.
Okay.
So then it's 8. Yeah. And of those years, probably like 4 of them, I have had a library card or I've really actively utilized the public library. I don't know. It's really funny. I lived I'm from La Jolla, California in San Diego. And in my teen years, my mom and I lived in an apartment complex that looked like a riverboat. Really painted really bright, like blue and white. And it backed up to the La Jolla Public Library. We were so close, in fact, that we stole our Wi-Fi from the library. We didn't pay for internet. And I always had it right next door, and, like, I barely ever used it. I was really into, like, makeup artistry at the time. Like, that was what I wanted to do. So I'd go and take out, like, every Kevin Aucoin book and, like, all, you know, all of that and use that. But, like, I think my mom said, like, oh, if you get an overdue fine, if you, like, have a fine and you don't pay it, it, like, goes on your credit report. I think she said something along those lines, and I got so scared about, like, not. I had, like, $13 in fees, I think. Or something, or $3 at the library, and I just, like, never went back, you know, because I was, like, afraid of what I would do or whatever. So cut to moving to L.A., and I had a temporary library card because you, in order to get a permanent library card, you have to have a bill, like a utility bill in your name. And because I was living with people where I wasn't the person who paid the bill, I paid somebody who paid the bill, I didn't have that. And so I had a temporary card and you can only check out like 3 books at a time or whatever. And I had like maybe checked like a book or 2 books out and then like wrecked than they were overdue. And I just was like, I was also like in my, I'm a recovering alcoholic, and I was like in my alcoholism. So I think I like had those books just like sitting there, like I could have taken them back and like just didn't. Anyways, I finally returned them and I had like $13 in fees, and I was like, oh, well, I can never go back there again. I'm like, I can't.
Again?
I have fees. Like, I can't, they can't see or whatever. Like, I was afraid to go back to the library for like to check things out. Like, I would go, and that's the other thing too, especially being a creative in Los Angeles when your employment is not spotty, or like it's on and off or whatever. You have a lot of free time.
You work one day a week.
Yeah, or you do some random shit, whatever. Yeah. Or you have an off period. Sometimes it's hard to be in your house, like, and it's easy to fall into like a, well, I'm just going to stay in my pajamas all day because I'm not working. And it's a beautiful place to be able to just get up and go, and you can go sit and read. And so I would do that. Like, I'd go when I didn't have things to do and I needed to get out of the house, I would go to the library and just read there. Like, I wouldn't check any books out, but I'd, like, look through books or whatever. Mm-hmm. And one day, I think I finally had, like, a steady, like, my first full-time job here a couple years ago, and I was like, I'm going to go. I'm going to pay off my fines. And I finally had a bill in my name because I'd moved into an apartment that was all mine. And I was like, I am going to pay off my fines and get a permanent library card. And I walk in, and it was February, probably like 3 years ago. And I was like, I would like to pay off my fines. And the people were so nice. And they were like, oh, the LA Public Library is doing for the month of February, we're doing the LA Public Library Loves You, and so we're doing fee forgiveness.
What?
And they just, all you had to do was like come. I don't think they've done it since, but like they were like, oh yeah, just we'll wipe your account. And so they wiped my $13 of fees, and it was like so lovely because I was so afraid of doing. Also, like it's $13, I could pay $13 for it. It wasn't like I couldn't, but I had some weird mental block. But once I was finally like let it go and was like, oh, I'm gonna go pay them, and they were like, oh, you don't have to pay, we'll wipe them. And then I filled out all the forms and showed them my bill and got a library card. And I swear to you, the first like couple months I had a library card, you can check out up to 30 books at once when you have a permanent library card, I would just walk down the aisle, and anything that the spine of it looked interesting to me, I would pull it. So I'd have these huge stacks of like 20 books, all like from all across the gamut, like novels, biographies, nonfiction, like all like cookbooks, manual, like writing, just everything. And I would read. And that's the thing that like, I think I was a voracious reader as a child, and like would read like 6 different books at once. I'd have them all like in my bag and good to go. And then once I got into high school, I think being forced to read made me not want to read outside of school. And then I didn't. And then college was just like very a lot of dense academic reading. And like, and I just didn't want to read for pleasure. The like last thing I wanted to do was open up another book. Right. And so I got out of the habit of reading, and I forgot that I love reading. And so that gave me, because I had free time and I had all of these books and it was free, you know, even if I didn't, most of them I would actually read all the way through, but like there's stuff, just a flipping through a book can, you can see a thing or read just a line or whatever that can make you think or give you an idea or put you in another direction. So like I did that for when I was, because I wasn't working, like I had a break or whatever, and I had these huge stacks of books. And this is, and the thing I also think that I didn't realize with the library now is how amazing they are technologically, is that you can go onto lapl.com or org, I'm not sure, but if you just Google LA Public Library and you have a library card, you go into their catalog. If the book's not at your library, you put a hold on it and they ship it to your library. Like that to me, I don't have to go anywhere. I go to the Will and Ariel Durant Public Library on Sunset in La Brea, and they have a stack of books waiting for me. And you can get any book from anywhere, any library in Los Angeles.
That's awesome.
So you have all of these things at your disposal. You can pay your fines online with your debit card. It's, they, you know, you get put in a queue if there aren't, like, you know, if there's three of that book available and they're all done, like you're seventh in line, but they send you an email when you're like, your hold's ready to pick up. I have a hold ready to pick up and I need to go get it. But yeah, so I've been like, it's just anything that strikes my fancy. And to be honest, I own maybe 10 or 12 books because they're the books that I read over and over again. But I don't buy books anymore because I don't need to, you know. And if I read a book that I've gotten from the library and I'm like, this needs to be a part of my life, then I buy it on Amazon or whatever. But like, it's fulfilling in a way that like I didn't expect it to be. And what I love is that it's inclusive. Anybody can go to a library and read, and they have everything there. And if you want to enrich your life and you want to think differently or you want to know more, you can. There's a place that you can go that is free, and you can do that, you know?
Yeah.
And I love that. And my best friend, her boyfriend Vince, is a child and teen librarian at the Amelia Earhart branch in North Hollywood. And he does all of these amazing, like, coordinates these teen programs where, like, they have crafts or they have, like, you know, fun events where, like, people will come and speak, like, comic book writers. And they're constantly working, like, the librarians are working to create these, like, interesting free classes, you know, or low cost of entry, like, crafts or art or whatever. They have, like, movie screenings, you know, like, all of these resources that I think we don't know are at our disposal.
That, I think this is common for our time. We don't make use of public architecture.
Yep.
Like things that are in place for the public. Because I love reading. And I also went through a time where I completely stopped reading. But I am a voracious reader, but I love to buy books.
Right.
And I do it all the time. And I have... Like when something catches my eye, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I'll be listening to like On Being or something, which everybody who listens to this podcast, On Being is like the grown-up version of At Least There's This. And I'll hear someone on and be like, gotta buy like three of their books, or I'll be curious about something and I'll find out like, oh, an author's already written like three books about that. So I end up owning a ton of books, and then I don't really have a place for them, and I don't necessarily get around to them all.
Right.
And I don't need to be buying books. And I'm the same age as you. I just turned 28, so I'm a year behind. So you have so much to teach me.
I'm so wise.
Yeah. Wise to the ways.
I'm very wise.
Of the public library.
You?
But I feel like our generation doesn't know... let me walk that back. I feel like maybe more of our parents' generation hasn't instilled in us that public things are good.
Right.
Like parks are great.
Yeah.
Libraries are awesome. Public schools are good. You know, like these are things that people ought to be excited about or want to make
better.
And that
we should take care of.
Yeah.
Yeah. That they are resources that we work towards for the greater good, even if you're not necessarily utilizing them, that all can utilize them. And I think we're kind of getting away from, I think politically it's getting away from that of like, it's privilege is what it is. It's a bunch of people who have the privilege of having access to all of these things, not understanding how devastating it is when you remove those opportunities from people who couldn't otherwise get them. And I don't think there's anything wrong with buying books either. Everybody's different. But for me, it was just like, I think that like, when you read, I always think of that quote from You've Got Mail of like, when you read a book, it becomes a part of your soul in a way that nobody can ever take. You know, like she goes on this long thing. And I think that that's true. And I know that there are people who like their libraries are an indicator of them. They've read all these books and they love them. But then also you have people like my ex who was like, well, I like that people see the books on my shelf and like they think a certain thing about me. And I'm like, well, who gives a fuck? Like, honestly, if you have a bunch of books on your shelf that you haven't read, it's at that point, it's just like art, which is fine. Like if you're cultivating that part of yourself,
It's buying
from
a
the exterior. That's okay. I mean, yeah. It's fine. Everybody can do what they want as long as they're not hurting somebody else. I don't take issue with a lot of it. But
that's a wonderfully sweet thing to say. I'll take issue with it for you. It's like buying the clothes of a country that you've never been to let people know that you're cool. It's like walking around in a kimono when you're a white dude with a samurai sword collection. You shouldn't do it. It's not your culture. And you probably don't understand what you're doing.
Yeah.
That, yeah.
On a lesser degree of terribleness, though. Sure. I feel like somebody who's got, like, War and Peace on their thing and is never going to read it, but wants people to think they read it, is different than somebody who's, like, you know.
Wearing a
who's
dashiki.
Wearing, I know I say this in quotes, boxer braids. You know, a white girl wearing, you know, cornrows and is like, they're boxer braids. And it's like, you need to shut up and take your hair out because you're embarrassing everybody.
Yeah, you're the reason I have to apologize a lot.
Yeah.
Also because that thing that I did in middle school. But it's you are the one of the two
and
reasons.
That. No one's ever gonna let me forget it. And I highly suggest, because my favorite thing is just when I have time, going and just walking up and down the aisles and picking a book based entirely on the title and spine. I just really like doing that. And I love nonfiction. I read way more nonfiction than fiction. I think the most recent fiction I read was Slow Days, Fast Company by Eve Babbitts, which was great. I'm more of a nonfiction lady because I find that constantly reading new things and ingesting new ideas helps me to, like, be a better version of myself and interact with the world in a better way.
Yeah. I have a... not so much a theory in that it's not new, but the way that I describe being a good artist is you have to eat a lot and then you just, like, whatever you shit out, like, that's it. And then you can craft it and make that better, but you should just eat better things.
Austin Kleon, that's his name, right? The guy who does Steal Like an Artist. Like, that's his big thing is... you just, everything is going to, that you ingest is going to affect your perspective in some way. The more you ingest, the more your perspective opens and is wider. And high and lowbrow stuff. Like, I think that a lot of people, like, give Kardashian shit. I have no problems with the Kardashians. And I think maybe we could all learn a little something about self-promotion and business from the Kardashians. Like, is the way that Kris Kardashian does things easily palatable for me? No. But, like, that I can enjoy Rothko painting as much as I can enjoy, earnestly, Grease 2. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's all important, and both of those things have very much informed who I am as a human. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
and
I guess...
but, like, to open yourself up to just learning about new stuff. And I think the library was a big part of, I was in a lot of financial hardship when I, like, was newly sober. I had created a lot of financial wreckage in my drinking. And the only way that I was able to get out of it was reading and learning, because I knew nothing about money. I knew nothing about paying back my debt. I knew nothing about budgeting. I didn't fundamentally understand anything about money, making it, valuing myself. I didn't know anything, really. And I knew that I didn't know anything. And I knew that if I wanted to have a different experience, I had to shift my perspective and open up my mind to what's possible. So... I went to the library and checked out a lot of books that were, you know, nonfiction on the nuts and bolts, on budgeting, on investing and saving. I mean, I don't invest, but, like, to know, to absorb that information and be like, okay, someday I want to get to this place.
Yeah.
But also books on, you know, confidence and self-worth and valuing yourself, on... energetically being, like, ready to receive good things, right? Like, all of those different types of books are available, you know? Or, like, biographies of people who have gone from nothing to something. And I needed to read all of it in order to set up debt repayment, figure out my student loan situation, start working jobs that paid me enough, work jobs that made me happy, showed up and know, like, to know that currency, because it's a current and it's an exchange,
right,
of like energy.
Yeah.
Back and forth is like basically what it is. The money actually itself is not anything, but it's what's behind it. And I had to do all of that in order to now be gainfully employed. I'm $50 away from paying off my credit card, have lived alone for almost 3 years and never missed my rent. I work a job that if you had told me 5 years ago, I would be like, told me the title of what I'm doing, I would have been like, fuck you, that's not possible. There's no way. And I think all of that is possible because I moved through the fear and just knew that I wanted to have a different experience. And what I loved about the library is it provided it for me for free.
Yeah, you know? That's really special. You're shaming me a little because I was really interested in a specific book for a long time. But it was a book about the ills of capitalism. Mm. So I didn't want to buy it from Amazon because it felt wrong.
That's fine.
Yeah. And so I was, every time I passed a bookstore, I would look for this book, right? And I just couldn't find it. And so finally, I was like, well, I can't find it at these bookstores. I guess my only option is to buy it from Amazon, the exact thing this book is talking, it's like having problems with, because that was the world to me. And right. I didn't even think, like,
hey, maybe I should have looked on lapl.org.
Yeah,
they probably have it somewhere.
They probably have 10 copies of this book that I can
and you
rent.
Could have had it delivered right to your library, the closest one to you.
Yeah.
Mine's a 5-minute drive from my house. They have a parking lot and everything.
And Wi-Fi, and you can, water fountains. You know, everything you need to not die in that moment.
Yep.
I could have had there. Oh, I'm embarrassed. There was a time, when I was 18 that I would go to the library a lot because I had no one in my life who read comic books.
Mm-hmm.
And I am from a place and a family where things like that weren't cool.
Right.
I'm not from a repressive family in any way, but I'm from a...
No, but it's not fostered, that sort of love or behavior.
We didn't watch wrestling in my family, right? Yeah.
We can talk about wrestling.
Wrestling was a thing that I was like, oh, no, that's for low-cultured people. And it wasn't until...
It's Greek theater is what it
it's
is.
It's amazing.
Incredibly highbrow.
My friend made me watch Royal Rumble with him a couple of weeks ago, and is like, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah, and the great thing about WWE is you can watch Raw any week and never have seen anything before, and you'll be confused for maybe 1 week of Raw, and then the moment you come back, you're like, oh, yeah, fucking, like, Braun Strowman, and then look, we got Brock Lesnar and all that. Like, you suddenly know how everything is.
Yeah. It's not Sasuke. That's from Naruto.
Shinsuke Nakamura.
Shinsuke Nakamura is the shit, but even more than him, I love the female wrestler.
Asuka.
Asuka is the shit. Mm-hmm. I want to be her now.
She's the best.
She gets to have so much fun.
We can't
talk about this too much because I promised my friend Diogo he gets to do a wrestling episode.
Wrestling's hard for me because I got into wrestling because my boyfriend at the time was writing for WWE. And now we've broken up. And I fell in love with wrestling, but now it's so hard to watch it.
Because you know that he's written some of it?
No. I mean, he finished working there before we broke up.
Okay.
But it was like... so much of, because I wanted to be able to talk about, like I do with things, if I want to be able to talk about something or connect with him on that level, I wanted to know what was going on, and so I started watching wrestling and fell really hard into it. Like, the Mae Young Classic was one of the most inspiring and amazing things that I've ever seen. It was an all-female, bracketed competition that was so good. So many different, body types and skin colors and personalities of women represented who were all strong and badass and fierce and like,
it's just
some
so...
who were like sexy and others who weren't, and like it just blew my mind because I was like, where is this other place? Like, where is this representation other places?
Yeah, and it's so loved by people all across America.
Yeah,
that like, this is big in Trump country, and this is the queerest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, there's a character in NXT named Velveteen Dream, a wrestler, not a character, a wrestler. And his whole vibe is like Prince. So he wears like crop tops and hoop earrings and like has like a very Jimi Hendrix like kerchief on his head, and he's very like flowy and feminine, and like it's so cool to watch. Like it's, and he's just a fucking good wrestler, but like that character is like the opposite of what, like, if you like it, right. the spectrum from him to Braun Strowman, and you're like, this is great.
Yeah.
Or Brock Lesnar, you know, who's a literal monster.
Yeah, that dude.
We started talking about wrestling now.
Why, I was about to say, sorry. Why the fuck are we talking about wrestling? What? How did we get here?
I don't know. You were talking about your family is not chill with.
It's just, they would never actively say, like, no, don't do that, but it definitely seemed like. Like,
okay,
why?
Fine, but do that on your own time and don't talk to us about it.
Yeah, like, why would you be into that? And I never sought it out, but, like, it just never came to my life. But I started to like comic books when I was 18, and there was nowhere to get them because I wasn't going to spend money on them.
Right.
Because I'm from a Jewish family and we're very fiscally responsible. So, I would start going to the library and see they'd have, like, hard covers, you know, like full runs of X-Men.
Omnibus or whatever.
Yeah, something
like
that.
Is that what that's called?
I know
an omnibus?
Omnibus is it's a podcast with a former Jeopardy winner, and it's on the How Does This Work network. I don't know. I listen to too many podcasts. So I would start reading comic books there, and I just suddenly like got really into the library until I went to college. Mm-hmm. And then I was in college, and I went to Sarah Lawrence, which has its amazing library, and that's different, though. A college library is nothing like a library.
I'm very lucky. I went to UCSD, and the Theodore Geisel Library on UCSD's campus is essentially a giant spaceship. It's shaped like a diamond.
This happens to be a visual glass. A visual
yeah,
medium.
Yeah, sorry,
so,
guys.
Yeah.
Just Google Geisel Library UCSD. Which is like multiple floors of just like every book you could ever, all these collections, everything. It's pretty cool. But I never went there. Like, I think about that. I was like, the only time I went to the library was you had to go to the, and I was in a weird, like, I went to college in a weird mid period where, like, when I started college, they still had readers, which I don't know if you have experienced readers. So, what would happen is if you'd had a class that had a lot of, like, articles, a lot of, like, things from journals or whatever, those published articles, they would print all of them out and bind them. And so you'd have a book that was essentially just all the articles you would need for the class. But then in about the middle of college, they switched over to using JSTOR, which was the online digital, thing where it'd be like, oh, this is your class. Here are all the articles you need to read, and they were digital. I fucking hated it because I like reading books. I like highlighting books. I like I can't read on. I have a very hard time reading on a computer. Like, people would make fun of me at my old job because I was doing like Instagram social media stuff, and I would print out articles and highlight them and write notes in the margins because I have to do, and I lose my place if I read digitally. Like, it's really hard.
That is the like. I would go down to the general store and play jacks with my friends.
It was very
thing of our generation.
Well, but I think it's like my age, and maybe you're older than me, is this weird, like, one of the things I identified most with in Lady Bird, of all things, was that she, when she got her, when schools started replying back to her, when I applied for college, there were a few that applied online, but other ones paper. So it was still this midpoint where some people had gone digital and others hadn't. And when I got my, like, letters back, some of them, like, all the private schools were mailed, but the UC system was one of the first to use a digital portal to find out whether you got in. And there's a part in Lady Bird where she goes, no, Davis, you find out online, and it's UC Davis. And so I was like, that is such a specific thing for that specific year that I don't think a whole lot of people outside of my age have experienced. But it seems like I'm on the cusp of a lot of that.
We're basically the same. When I graduated from high school in 08, when did you graduate?
2006.
2000. Okay, cool. So you were, then I'm 2 years below you in the school system.
Right. Which I was like, I think it was like me and maybe the year older than me that probably was that weird overlap time.
Yeah.
Because it was another thing of like, in fifth grade, my teacher, Miss Levine, said you need to learn cursive because when you're writing papers in high school, you have to write it in cursive. And then by the time I got to high school, everything was on the computer. Yeah. But she was still teaching. Like, I think I might have been the last year of them teaching cursive as a thing. Right?
I don't know about your high school. I also learned cursive. And my younger brother, who's 2 years younger than me, also learned cursive.
Well, I'm glad because I love cursive. And I only write in cursive because my penmanship is so bad, my printing. I have a tremor in my left hand, so it's just easier to write quickly in cursive.
I can't write at all. I'm dysgraphic. It's like an actual thing. Mm. So I can't write. And they're like, well, learn cursive. And I'm like, well, now I'm just dysgraphic in cursive.
I just can't fucking do. Now it's taking me a long time to do a thing that would already take me a long time to do.
Just let me make a thing for me and call it a computer and let me do my tests on that, Dad.
Can you type? Type is fine, but it's the writing. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm the opposite, or like if I need to get out feelings.
You have to write it.
I write it by hand. And when I write scripts and things, when I need to like do the storyboard type of work. Like, people make fun of me at work because part of my job is writing packages for our shows. And there's, like, looking over a bunch of footage from past shows and, like, cutting stuff together. But what I do is I, like, write every clip on a note card and I put them all out in front of me and I move them around to, like, find the flow and see what physically, like, goes together.
Very
Whereas everybody is just, like... does it in their brain, but yeah. I'm like, I have to see this, otherwise I'm gonna miss something. And it helps me to like, but it, like if I'm doing notes like A storyline, B storyline, C storyline, and like breaking down scenes, I write it out by hand. Yeah. And then I'll type it up once I kind of figure it out. But
okay, I want to get back to the library because we fucking digressed. So big. It was a big time digression.
We went to wrestling and writing. Wrestling. We talked about libraries, though, recently.
Recently.
ECS, like college libraries.
Yeah. I want to get to libraries, I think, in a more general sense. What about there being libraries makes you think this is a good world?
Oh. Because it's they don't want anything in return, right? It's like, here's knowledge, here's power for you at no cost. Please treat our space nicely, but, like, this is for you. Go out and do well. Go out and live your life and enjoy yourself. And you don't have to pay us for it.
That's awesome.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we live in a capitalist society, and that's just the way it is, right? And I can't keep, like, being mad about it because right now that's just the way it is. But I think that having things like public spaces that are free, libraries, you know, free clinics, stuff like that is still, it balances it out for me that, like, yeah, a library is always going to be there.
Yeah.
I could lose it, you know. I could have to tighten up my budget and not be able to really go anywhere or do anything. But I would eat ramen and go to the library. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'd walk to the library, like... The fact that we can do that and it's a resource that's available to us, and I think especially like for someone like me who likes to isolate, it's a good place to be like, I need to go somewhere.
Mm.
I need to go to a place that doesn't expect anything of me. Like,
yeah,
just I can go to a library. I can wander up and down the aisles. I can find a book I want to read. I can sit down and read it for a couple of hours. And when I leave, I'm just in a different place than I was when I came in.
Here's what I love about that I find poetic. We are in a space right now, I think, our generation, where people are coming around to this idea of self-care.
Yeah.
They rhyme. but it's in this very sanctified idea of self-care, where self-care means hard wood floored yoga studio, Palo Santo burning, vibrational music playing, deified crystal statues, and everything is flowy and smells fancy and everyone looks nice.
Right.
But the library, it's always like gross short carpet and popcorn ceilings, and there's a hum to the lights, but it is a truly beautiful place for self-care.
Right.
You don't need anything fancy. The fact that it just simply exists is, that's like a real, spiritual place.
Yeah. And believe me, I'm all for, I've got smoky quartz in my bag and I use Korean sheet masks and I'm all about taking baths for self-care. But I think that it self-care can be such things as going outside, drinking a glass of water, taking a shower. Like there's a whole spectrum of self-care, and there's intellectual self-care, you know, there's bodily self-care. I personally, like, one of my intellectual self-care, intellectual slash emotional self-care, I can't watch our president. I can read an article and if I to know what happened, but I cannot listen to his voice or watch him, because it puts me in such an emotional upheaval that it is unhealthy for me. And it took me like a while to like figure out that that was what that was. Everybody's different. But for me personally, like, my friend texted me, he was like, you watching the State of the Union? And I was like, no, I am not.
I don't want to drink gasoline.
Hear what will, you know, and yeah. I've blocked him on Twitter, because I'm going to know what everybody else is talking about. I'm going to know what happened, you know? And that's the thing that I think is problematic, is that people are like, well, if you're an intellectual, if you are an informed person, you need to be aware of what's going on at all times. I don't think that's true. I think you can still be informed and know what's going on and be active. Not everybody can do that emotionally, right? We're all doing the best we can with the tools we have. And I think as soon as people figure out where their, like, boundaries are with that sort of thing, it makes life a little easier.
Yeah.
I just can't, it just, and I don't know if people are going to listen to this and be like, well, that's irresponsible, but I don't know. I don't need to listen to him. I don't need to see him. I know what he's doing.
Yeah, you're going to learn. You said it already. You're going to learn, and you're going to learn it. You can listen to him in real time without ever looking at his face or listening to his words.
Yep.
Because there are enough people not even giving you hot takes, just like saying
exactly what happened.
This is what he said. Here you go. Wow. Okay. So I think what I keep coming back to with this is the mundanity or maybe the sanctity of a mundane space.
Yeah.
I'm
going to look. Wait. Yeah. I want to find, there's a Bukowski poem that I love called Air and Light and Time and Space. And it says, you know, I've either had a family, a job, something has always been in the way. But now I've sold my house. I found this place, a large studio. You should see the space and the light. For the first time in my life, I'm going to have a place and the time to create. No, baby, you're going to create. You're going to create whether you work 16 hours a day in a coal mine, or you're going to create in a small room with three children while you're on welfare. You're going to create with part of your mind and your body blown away. You're going to create blind, crippled, demented. You're going to create with a cat crawling up your back while the whole city trembles in earthquakes, bombardment, flood, and fire. Baby, air and light and time and space have nothing to do with it, and don't create anything except maybe a longer life to find new excuses for. And that to me is like, I think we have an idea in our mind of like, and I think it, like, Instagram and social media has definitely like made this a bigger thing of like, you know, my life and my space, and like I have the time and the time management and like all of this, like, that's not reality for people. And I think that when we make being creative or being like happy into these like unattainable goals, like we were talking about before with like self-care, of like, if you don't have $200 to go to a yoga studio every month that has like, you know, and there's nothing wrong with yoga either, yeah. But like, I think everybody's circumstances are different, and how we are able to create is different, and not one way is better or more right than the other way. And you figure out the time when you can do things, and you do them. I think if we keep waiting for the circumstances to be perfect to do these things, we're never going to do anything. There are plenty of people who have come from extreme poverty, terrible situations, and that have flourished creatively, and it's because they just did it. And the circumstances weren't perfect. And there are mundane spaces like public libraries where you can go and do that and be fairly distraction-free. You'll figure out a way if you really want to do it. And that's I think that spaces like parks or public libraries are places where you can, you don't need the circumstances to be, or the conditions to be perfect. They're just, you can just do it. You don't have to dress up.
I think I want to end right there. Is there anything we haven't gotten to where I should have like tried to ask a certain question? Anything maybe you want to say?
Pay your fines and go back to the library if it's keeping you from doing that.
That's awesome. Thank you. Katie, where can people find you? What do you have coming up?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at K-A-W-I-L-L-E-R-T. So that's at K-A Willert. And currently, I don't know. I'm just laugh at things I read on Twitter, I guess. What I'm doing in a public-facing way.
That's your call to action, guys. That's it. You go look at things she's written on Twitter and laugh silently to yourselves.
Chuckle.
Yeah.
Chuckle quietly.
Chortle. Everybody, I love every time you listen in. If you happen to like what you've heard, please share it with a friend. It does go a long way. This is an entirely a word-of-mouth podcast because paying for advertisement on Facebook is just like throwing your money into a well. And I've done that. You know, I used to do that in college, but I'm older now and it's no fun. So, yeah, please share it with a friend. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter now because I guess I'm part of that world.
Welcome.
It sucks. At least pod on all three. I don't know how to play this game. I'm sorry. So just follow me on Twitter. Why not? Because I don't have the wherewithal to do it myself. But I'll be putting out my podcast there as well. Again, share it with a friend. That goes a long way. And if you happen to, I don't know, be in like really bad traffic right now, go to iTunes, find my podcast, give it 5 stars. It'll take you enough time that no one's going to honk at you because you haven't gone, and it'll mean a lot to me. Thank you, and I will talk to you all next time. Bye.